1460 WVOA.
Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX presents The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel. Provocative conversation about world issues. Now, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Hello and welcome to our program, The Advocates, on WVOX 1460 AM. My name is Richard J. Garfunkel. I am the host of this weekly forum. This program is coming live from New Rochelle, the Queen City, located on the Long Island Sound, and can also be heard live streaming worldwide at WVOX.com. One can call into WVOX at 914-636-0110. But as I say each week, please stay germane to our subject. My guest is Peter Montgomery of People for the American Way, and our subject are two critical subjects that face America regarding public policy: the Establishment Clause regarding freedom of religion and the Supreme Court ruling in the Citizens United case, the buying of elections by unlimited corporate money. Welcome, Mr. Montgomery, to The Advocates, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Richard. I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you. You know, meanwhile, as I say each week, the mission of The Advocates is to bring to the public differing views on current public policy issues. Public policy, therefore, is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow. Peter Montgomery oversees People for the American Way's Foundation's research and writing on the religious right, as well as their work to help progressives understand and more effectively communicate with important constituencies, particularly the reachable religious middle. He's also a spokesperson on a range of issues such as the Supreme Court, the religious right, political movement, religion and politics, lesbian and gay rights, public education, and free speech. Before joining People for the American Way in 1994, he was the associate editor, director of grassroots lobbying for Common Cause, where he planned, directed grassroots lobbying campaigns, volunteer recruitment, and media relations strategy. He wrote and edited for Common Cause magazine, an award-winning journal featuring investigative reporting about the federal government. Peter, thank you again for joining me on this historic week in American history. And before we start, I want to express my thanks publicly for the great and historic effort American forces used in eliminating the number one criminal in the world. I also want to congratulate the president for his continued effort in fighting the war on terrorism here and all around the world. Before we get into our subjects today, Peter, tell our audience what the People for the American Way does and what are its goals.
Sure. People for the American Way is an organization that is made up of people who are dedicated to making the promise of America real for every person. By that, we mean equality, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the right to seek justice in the courts, the right to cast a vote that counts. We believe these values and principles make up the American way, and we think that it's worth fighting for a society that reflects these principles and values. We take seriously our responsibility to get people engaged in our civic life and to cultivate new generations of leaders and activists who will fight for those values in the future. So we think of our mission as promoting the American way, defending it from attack, building and nurturing groups of people and communities of support for those values, and equipping them to engage in the public arena to promote good policies and elect good candidates and hold public officials accountable. So we try to work on all those fronts.
This is certainly right up the alley of public policy. There's no question about that. You know, meanwhile, to one of our subjects today, the concept of separation of church and state is often credited to the mind of the British philosopher John Locke, whose influence was keenly felt in drafting the United States Constitution. In his social contract, he talked about a natural right in the liberty of conscience. This led to the thought that religious freedom was sacrosanct to the individual and that right should be inviolable by any government, agency, dictator, or authority. Under our Constitution, the treatment of religion is divided into two clauses, the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause. With regards to the free exercise, the treatment of religious practice should not be impugned by government unless there's a clear violation of state law. Basically, courts have ensured that important religious rights are not impeded, and they've usually demand that state laws restricting religious practices must show the state has valid interest in protecting its citizens from being bodily violated. Peter, today there have been efforts by some to blur the effect and meaning of the Establishment Clause. Where do these threats come from, And who is David Barton? You can answer it any way you wish.
Great. Before I get into the threats, I do just want to sort of pull back to the bigger picture, which is how important the Establishment Clause is and why we think it's really a defining part of America's character as a nation. Our founders, you know, saw what it was like to have official religions in other countries and how that was something that led to oppression. And they chose to write a constitution and to put in the First Amendment this basic principle that your rights as a citizen will have nothing to do with what religion you believe or don't believe. And we think that's really a defining part of what it means to America, to be an American. And that's why we think it's so important that we work to uphold the Establishment Clause, which protects religion from the power of government. And so it's good for religion as much as it's good for the government and for democracy. And I think, you know, we can think about threats coming to the Establishment Clause from three different directions, and some of them overlap. Some are legal threats, some are political threats, and some are what you might call cultural threats. And these are really coming from the religious right movement and its political allies, those people who are opposed to the separation of church and state, and who are trying to get our legal and political systems to adopt and enforce their idea that America was meant to be a Christian nation. So there's a legal effort underway by religious right legal groups to assault the legal principles that protect church state separation and religious liberty. And they've had some success in eroding the court's defense of church-state separation by claiming somehow that by upholding church-state separation, you're discriminating against religious people and religious organizations. So that's sort of a legal challenge. On the political front, we're disappointed that the Obama administration has actually not done more to fix major flaws in the Bush administration's faith-based initiative involving public funding for houses of worship and tax money for religious discrimination. And we can get into the details more. But so that's kind of some policy that we think is undermining protections for religious liberty. And there's a number of those. And then on the cultural front, and this is where sort of people like David Barton come in, there's a real effort by religious right figures, and David Barton is a self-proclaimed historian who comes out of the religious right. There's a real effort to miseducate Americans about the founders and about their intentions and about the constitutional principle of separation of church and state. And they're trying to convince millions of Americans that the Constitution and the founders, you know, were intended to create a nation of, by, and for Christians, and that our notions of separation of church and state are wrong, and that's somehow secular elites who are stealing the country from the Christians that it's supposed to belong to. You know, we think that's bad history, it's bad constitutional law, and it's bad for the country. It's divisive, and it's not accurate. So, unfortunately, David Barton has a big following among not only religious right activists, but among Republican Party leaders who sort of adopt his bad history about this being a Christian nation and that our founding documents and the Constitution are somehow religious documents as opposed to setting up a government that was very carefully set up to be separate from religion.
Right, to avoid that, yes. And interestingly, most of our founding fathers really weren't, they were most interested in decentralizing religion. Almost they were practically deists, if anything. And you cite that in your interview, I know that I saw on television with Lawrence O'Donnell regarding the adoption of Bibles, as according to Barton, as an indication that the founding fathers wanted to take on one Bible, one version, as our American credo.
Right, and there's, you know, there certainly was a range of religious belief among the founders, but you know, all the time that David Barton and others spent, you know, seeking out letters and indications that the founders had some religious beliefs, you know, it's really not that relevant. The founders put together the Constitution, and if they wanted the Constitution to say all our Bibles, all our laws have to be in alignment with this interpretation of the Bible, or that this is meant to be a Christian nation, they had every opportunity to put that in the Constitution.
Right, they would have said
and
it.
And instead, they gave us the First Amendment.
Right.
So that's really what's important.
Right. You know, the Supreme Court over the years has made some notable exceptions to the absolutism of the Establishment Clause regarding busing, books, some public displays of religion icons or symbols, as in a couple of cases, Everson versus the Board of Education and Lemon versus Kurtzman. With this current court, which has some of the most conservative justices since the New Deal, actually much more conservative than the New Deal justices, according to a New York Times study, do you see a trend regarding this potential erosion of this separation?
We do see some evidence that the Roberts Court is moving to undermine church-state separation, and it is troubling. Most recently, just last month, there was an Arizona case that came up to the court, and the court actually dismissed it based on a lack of standing. And the case involves an Arizona plan to divert tax dollars to religious schools. And the courts have found problems with diverting tax dollars to religious schools. So in Arizona, they tried to get around those legal principles by saying, okay, we're not going to directly send tax dollars. We're going to allow people to take a direct credit off their taxes for money that they donate to organizations that will then give that money to religious schools.
Yeah, it's sort of like a backdoor effort.
Sure, and it's basically sort of a money laundering scheme if you think about it, or that's certainly one way to think about it.
We have to come up, Peter, a short financial news update. I want to remind our audience that they're listening to The Advocates on WVOX 1460 AM, live streaming on WVOX.com. My guest is Peter Montgomery, of the People for the American Way and an expert on the religious right and the threat to freedom of religion. We'll be back in a moment or so. Thanks.
News at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, the Bears are in charge of Wall Street as doubts about the health of the jobs market and the broader economy have investors on edge. The Dow was down 106 points as of 12 p.m. Eastern, and jury deliberation in one of the biggest insider trading cases in history will have to start again after a juror was dismissed for medical reasons. A 70-year-old female juror in the case against Galleon Group founder Raj Rajaratnam will be replaced by alternate number two. Rajaratnam has been absent from court since Monday after having emergency surgery on his foot. And Sony hiring several companies to investigate the massive security breach of two of its networks. The company is trying to figure out who stole personal information for more than 100 million user accounts. The Wall Street Journal says some of the attacks came from a server based in Malaysia, but it's not clear if any of the hacking was done from there. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Diane Macedo.
Attention parents, if your son is 11 to 17 years old and exhibits oppositional or defiant behavior patterns, we will offer you our best-selling child behavior program, The Total Transformation, for free as part of a national market research project. By sending in your results, you'll get our $300 program for free. Call now and find out how you can participate. 1-800-876-7963. 1-800-876-7963. That's 1-800-876-7963.
Wherever you listen.
In the shower.
I listen to it all the time. I listen at work, in my car, when I get up.
Thanks for keeping it here. WVOX Worldwide.
1460 WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates with my guest, Mr. Peter Montgomery, and we're discussing the Establishment Clause and the potential threat to freedom of religion. Recently, the People for the American Way addressed a congressional committee with regards to the mottos In God We Trust, and E Pluribus Unum. Peter, could you tell us why the issue of these mottos came up, and what is behind the movement to put the motto, In God We Trust, which became our official national motto in 1956 on public buildings?
Well, the reason that that has come up is that there is a congressional resolution that was sponsored by Republican Representative Randy Forbes from Virginia, and it has a couple of dozen co-sponsors. And it's to sort of reaffirm In God We Trust, which, as you say, was made the official motto during the Cold War era, and about the same time that Under God was added to the Pledge of Allegiance. But the goal of those that are pushing for this is really to get these religious messages into public buildings, and particularly into public schools. And, you know, it's really political grandstanding. There is no threat to In God We Trust as the motto. There's really no reason to have to reaffirm it. This putting up a vote like this is really just a way to give politicians and demagogues on TV and radio and the internet a way to call people who disagree with them unpatriotic and anti-religious.
Right, love it.
It's really a waste of congressional time, right. And it's just kind of a sad commentary on where our politics are on some of these issues.
Right, America, love it or leave it. You know,
right.
In the well-publicized 2003 case of Judge Roy Moore, he was removed from his post as the Alabama chief judge over his display of the Ten Commandments on court property. Are there any similarities to what happened and the actions of Judge Moore? Or has that sort of been put to rest, that type?
Well, I would say it has not been put to rest. You know, Moore was removed from office because he refused to obey a federal court order that he take out this religious display that he had installed in his courtroom. But there are still plenty of others around the country who tried to get around Supreme Court decisions we've had around this. And, the court decisions have been tricky. In 2005, the court upheld the Ten Commandments display on public land in Texas and rejected one in Kentucky. It has to do with, whether there's clearly a religious intent or whether it's part of a historical display. So the law is complicated in this arena. But there are some people who are trying to push it much further. And actually, just earlier this year, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal court, rejected the claims of a state judge in Ohio and said that a lower court was correct to order him to take down these posters that he had put up in the courtroom promoting his religious beliefs and sort of denigrating what he described as the moral relativism of humanism. So we still have people, and we still have people with the power of judges trying to inappropriately use their office to promote their religious beliefs. And that's why vigilance on this
is important.
Principle is important.
You know, since the administration of George W. Bush, the debate over the issue of faith-based initiatives came into the ongoing public policy arena. Currently, we're spending between $7 and $10 billion in grants to many of these religious institutions. One of the concerns regarding faith-based initiatives is the possibility of proselytizing and the introduction of religious discrimination in federally sponsored activities. I know there were some tremendous incidents at the Air Force Academy that were brought to the attention of the government. What's your feeling on these faith-based initiatives?
Well, I would say, again, the big picture here is that there are correct and appropriate ways for the government to partner with religious-based groups who are providing social services. And we have a long principle, and there's a long track record of organizations like Catholic Charities and Lutheran Social Services partnering with governments to help feed the poor and do other kinds of social services. But there's also a long track record of protections put in place that these are organizations that are not churches, but that are separate nonprofits. Money cannot be used to proselytize, and until the Bush administration, it was very clear that federal money could not be used to subsidize religious discrimination. So there is a way for groups to work with the government. Now, President Bush's faith-based initiative and some legal analysis that came out of his White House really turned over some of those principles and started a direct funding of houses of worship without the safeguards of creating a separate nonprofit. And that, creating that separate nonprofit not only protects the people who get services, but also, protects this church-state separation, because if you're giving money directly to a house of worship and want some accountability for how that money is spent, then you start getting the government directly involved in a church's business in ways that is not appropriate. So those safeguards are set up to protect both the government and the churches, and so those were set aside.
And it's very costly. You know, people talk about the budget, and this is a public policy in terms of spiritualism or how people pray or people have belief, which is fine.
Well, when President Obama came into office, he had campaigned on that he was in favor of these faith-based and community partnerships, but he campaigned saying that he was going to ensure that they were done in ways that sort of went back to some of those core principles of not funding direct houses of worship and not funding religious discrimination. And in 2009, he created an advisory council that had a religiously and politically diverse membership, and they put together a set of recommendations, some of which were addressed in an executive order from the White House in November. And we're really disappointed because that executive order does address some of the issues that people have raised, but it still allows direct funding of houses of worship, which is an erosion of First Amendment principles, and it does not address what really most concerns a lot of us advocates, which is federal funds being used to subsidize religious discrimination. And that's federal funds being used to subsidize jobs that are only open to people who have certain religious beliefs. Mm. We don't think that's appropriate, and we and a lot of other organizations are continuing to push the administration to do more on that.
We only have a few seconds before our next break, but a quick question. Does this rise in, evangelical proselytizing reflect a growing political and spiritual rift between orthodoxy and religious secularism? Do you see this rift continuing and widening in this country?
Well, I think there are clearly significant religious and political differences between those who go to church most frequently and those who attend less often or not at all. And there are a growing number of Americans who claim no affiliation, and there's an increasingly pluralistic society, which is all makes it even more dangerous to have people trying to say that this country was only meant for folks of one religious persuasion.
Yeah, we have to go to a break. I want to remind our audience who are listening to WVOX 1460 AM. We're live streaming on WVOX.com. My guest, Peter Montgomery, been talking about the impact of religion regarding separation of church and state. When we come back from the break, we're going to shift our discussion of political campaigns. In other words, the influence of money, specifically the upcoming election cycle, and the impact of Citizens United Supreme Court decision. We'll be back in a moment. Thank you.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. We still haven't seen what the White House calls gruesome, but a senior U.S. official tells Fox News what's in an Osama bin Laden death photo.
A large open wound to the forehead. We're also told that one of bin Laden's eyes is open, one is completely gone.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin at the Pentagon. The Senate Intelligence Committee got a briefing today with members from both parties agreeing the White House has a decision to make.
Arizona Republican John McCain says when it comes to releasing photos,
that's a judgment that has to be made by the president and taking all things into consideration.
But he adds there's already ample evidence proving bin Laden's demise, and it's not necessary to release the photos.
Fox News Radio's Rich Johnson in Washington. Meanwhile, many in Congress continue to push for answers from Pakistan about whether it knew bin Laden was living there and operating his compound for perhaps 6 years. Fox News. We report. You decide.
This is Bill O'Shaughnessy with an important word for business owners in our region. These changing times, I think, present a whole new set of problems for proprietors, for owners of independent regional companies. But with all the change, I think, comes new opportunities. And thus, we recommend highly the Alan D. Rosenberg Company. Founded by Alan Rosenberg, he's a wonderful man, as a specialized accounting practice for independent local companies Allen Rosenberg and Company know the pressures and problems of maintaining and growing a retailer service business in this day and age. With offices in Westchester and in the city, Allen Rosenberg and Company earned their professional spurs for over 30 years now, advising large, very prestigious firms and high net worth individuals, as they're called. And they have a special understanding, thus, of smaller, growing companies, where they are today, I think, unequaled in the field. So if you're satisfied with your present accounting firm and financial advisors, so be it. But if you're looking for a little more brain power from an independent accounting practice where they don't farm it out to a computer, we suggest you call the Allen D. Rosenberg Accounting Firm for a consultation. If you've been feeling it's time your accountant, and I feel like this, spoke your language and was a little more on your wavelength, Allen Rosenberg and Company. The number is 914-722-6901 in the county, or in Manhattan, 212-382-3939. In Westchester, 914-722-6901. Manhattan, 212-382-3939. These guys really know.
Ron, that completes your orientation at Sagona Industries. Just one thing, though. Sneakers are not office attire.
Quite the contrary, Joan. The right footwear is essential to my job. I'll be running to the fax machine, leaping to the printer, racing to the scanner, cornering at high speed to beat my office mates to the copier.
Ron, we have a Canon Image Runner 400. You won't need to leave your desk. You'll use the network to manage copying, printing, faxing, scanning, and sophisticated document finishing at up to 40 pages per minute.
But I do very thick reports.
Right.
Won't I need adequate ankle support to work the really big industrial-sized stapler?
No.
Dashing to the bindery for saddle-stitch booklets?
Ron, our Canon Image Runner 400 makes all the saddle-stitch booklets you want.
Oh, then I have time to run for a cup of coffee.
Like the wind, Ron.
For more on the Canon Image Runner, call George and Bob Forstbauer's Vista Business Products at 914-347-7888 or visit us on the web at www.vistacanon.com.
The Wartburg Adult Care Community offers the right care at the right time to help you be as independent as possible for as long as possible. That might mean living at home with a little help from the Wartburg's licensed home care agency, or spending time with friends and enjoying activities at Club Wartburg's adult day programs. It might mean downshifting to a spacious, independent rental townhouse on the Wartburg's 36-acre park-like grounds that leaves the worries of home maintenance behind. Or if companionship, gourmet meals, and a little extra attention are in order, then Meadowview Assisted Living may give you a new view on life. And after illness or injury, the Wartburg's Rehabilitation Center assists in recovery to your highest possible functional level so you stay strong. Nurturing mind, body, and spirit in our community for over a century, the Wartburg is committed to helping you live longer, live better, and love life. Call 914-669-0800 for information on the many ways the Wartburg cares.
Now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Forecast Westchester County and the vicinity for this afternoon. We'll see cloudy skies with showers. Continuing highs will climb up near 60. And fall through the upper 40s later today. Mostly cloudy. Overnight lows dropping upper 30s close to 40. Outlook for Thursday, we'll see partly to mostly cloudy conditions. Chance of a thunderstorm through the afternoon. Highs will climb into the lower 60s. Partly sunny weather on Friday. Looks dry into the upper 60s. Clouds and sun near 70 on Saturday. Steve Pelletieri, Jr. reporting for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460 WVOX.
1460 WVOX.
Now, back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the Advocates and my guest, Peter Montgomery of the People for the American Way. The Citizens United decision supports the legal theory that corporations have basically unlimited First Amendment rights to influence American elections. And it seems that a huge body of precedent has been wiped away with that opinion. Peter, what are the real-world consequences of that decision for the health of the American democracy?
Well, they're devastating, Richard. As you said, that case really wiped away decades of precedent that said that there are good reasons for the government to regulate the corrupting power of corporate money flowing into political campaigns. And in Citizens United, the court overturned that and declared that the government cannot suppress corporations' political speech, and saying that speech really, means spending by corporations. And so what we saw in the 2000 elections was just this huge ocean of corporate money, at least hundreds of millions of dollars, possibly more, that flooded into the political process. Some of it was disclosed and some of it was not. Some of it went into a whole collection of new nonprofit organizations that were set up to sort of hide the sources of that money. Some were funneled through existing organizations like the United States Chamber of Commerce and other groups that work on specific issues. But we just saw this flood of money from health insurance companies, from the Wall Street financial industry, pharmaceuticals, energy companies, and others who, are really looking out for their bottom line and who now have a green light to even have a much greater influence than they already had on the political process and on the selection of people who make our public policies. So we think that's just really bad for the health of democracy, and that's why we think that we need to have a constitutional amendment to address this decision.
It probably then, maybe that's what the response is. The potentiality of that is, at this stage, is slim and none. But interestingly, the fact the Constitution said nothing about corporations, certainly nothing as explicit as the Establishment Clause, which may reflect the evidence that right-wing justices have their own results-oriented approach to law, and we believe that this is undermining American rights and legal protections. With all this in mind, many people that believe that spending is now out of control, there is the average citizen able to ante up when it comes to running? In other words, has this become just either a rich person's game or access to riches to run at almost any level?
Well, even before Citizens United, the influence of money in our political system was huge. And previous Supreme Court decisions had made it impossible, essentially, for wealthy people made it impossible for the government to prevent wealthy people from spending unlimited amounts of their own money to get elected. So we had already seen this trend of both political parties looking for, quote, self-financing candidates, people who had enough wealth to basically run campaigns. On the other side, we had also just in the recent couple of elections seen the power of the Internet and social networks to help really bring together people with making small contributions in large enough numbers to start making a difference. And so there have been some new ways for people that didn't have great wealth or who were not supported by moneyed interests to get involved. But Citizens United certainly is a huge setback to all that, because it just invites corporations and billionaires like the Koch brothers who have essentially unlimited resources to come into campaigns. And we've already seen them not only pouring that money into campaigns like we saw in 2010 elections, but also using it really as a threat. One of the efforts that is one of the legislative efforts that have been made to sort of reduce the harm done by Citizens United is a bill called the Disclose Act, which would try to force greater disclosure of a lot of the money that is now secret, flowing secretly to influence elections.
Who's supporting whom? And
I was just going to say the point was that the Chamber of Commerce really threatened members of Congress with ads against them if they voted for the bill. So that the threat that they can turn this spigot of unlimited corporate money against people is having an impact on the kind of laws that affect Americans' lives.
Yeah, it's an escalating arms race of election costs. In the long run, this is only good for the printers, the media, the people who are doing polling. It's certainly not going to enable a broad-based democracy to encourage people to be part of the process. You know, in the election cycle of 2010, we saw three distinct consequences. Large spending by groups outside the normal party system, which you mentioned. 33 million less people voting. There's always a fall off in midterm elections. And a great many incumbents retiring and defeated. As a consequence, we saw an influence of the Tea Party, anti-government libertarians nominated in the GOP primaries and winning in swing districts. Was this turnover a consequence of the ocean of corporate cash, or was it just a reflection of the constant drumbeat against government?
I would say both, and I would say that they're interrelated. There certainly was, there were a lot of big picture issues going on in this election. Concern about the budget deficit, concern about the economy, the fact that there's just millions and millions of Americans suffering from the recession and out of work, and the slowness of the job recovery. So that was a big thing all in itself, just the state of the economy and the state of jobs in the country. But there was also clearly a huge amount of money, vast amount of corporate money that was flowed into elections to argue the case that the government is the problem, to argue that the financial crisis was not caused by Wall Street, but was somehow caused by government and government efforts to regulate Wall Street, which is ridiculous on the face of it.
No question.
But some of this, I said, is interrelated, because a lot of the corporate money also sort of flowed through groups that were designed to co-opt the Tea Party energies and to sort of take this, you know, supposedly grassroots Tea Party movement and funnel it through corporate-funded groups like Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works, which really took this kind of, you know, concerted citizen energy and attempted to direct it in ways that would advance the corporate agenda and elect politicians that'll do the corporations' work for them.
Right. We have to go to a commercial break. I want to remind audience, you're listening to WVOX 1460 AM. We're live streaming on WVOX.com. My guest, Peter Montgomery, has been discussing Citizens United Supreme Court ruling, which the Roberts Courts determined that corporations have virtually the same rights as an individual contribute to a political campaign. We'll be back in a moment or so. Thank you.
And national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. The Attorney General says the U.S. terror watch list will likely grow now that the government is in possession of a trove of intel from the Osama bin Laden raid.
As we glean information from that material, we will make appropriate decisions with regard to who might be added to the terrorist watch list, the no-fly list, all those things.
Eric Holder testifying at a Senate hearing, also saying the killing of bin Laden was legal. No decision yet on whether to release pictures of the dead al-Qaeda leader. According to a senior U.S. official with access to the images,
one of bin Laden's eyes is open while the other eye is, quote, completely gone, this official said. Neither the exit wound in the back of the head nor the chest wound can be seen in the photo.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin, and the Coast Guard has resumed the search for a cruise ship passenger believed to have disappeared somewhere between Mexico's Baja Peninsula and San Diego. The 65-year-old woman did not show up for a customs check when the ship docked in San Diego yesterday. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Here's a special message from Whitney Radio. The Broadcasters Foundation of America and Fordham University Press are making available a limited quantity of signed first edition copies of William O'Shaughnessy's brand new book, Vox Populi, The O'Shaughnessy Files. Only just now arriving in bookstores coast to coast for $35. Copies of the new Bill O'Shaughnessy book have arrived at WVOX and WVIP in Westchester. For every $35 donation to the Broadcasters Foundation of America, you'll receive a signed, personally inscribed first edition copy of Vox Populi, The O'Shaughnessy Files. Character profiles and heartwarming vignettes of legendary Westchester and New York figures. Jack Newfield, Bob Grant, Ossie Davis, Wellington Mara, Robert Merrill, John Spicer, Larry King, Ned Garrity, Dr. Rich Pisano, Mario Cuomo, Harry Belafonte, and beloved townies like Bill Skolin and John Branca. A dazzling and entertaining tour of Westchester and New York, past and present. You can now pick up signed copies of the brand new Bill O'Shaughnessy Westchester History Book here at our studios in New Rochelle. It makes a great gift for anyone who loves colorful characters and enjoys politics in New York and Westchester. A limited time offer for just $35 to the Broadcasters Foundation of America. Signed copies are available now at WVOX and WVIP, One Broadcast Forum, New Rochelle. Call 914-636-1460 for directions. 636-1460. 636-1460.
Just over the Westchester line in downtown Greenwich, there's a spectacular new dining venue, Gabriel's Italian Restaurant. At number 35 Church Street, owner Danny Gabriel has created a warm, stylish restaurant with a great becoming wood-burning stone fireplace. A perfect setting for some of the best food Greenwich and nearby Westchester has ever seen. The hand-selected prime steaks, seasoned with sea salt and crushed peppercorns and seared to perfection, are the real deal at Gabriel's. Plus all your favorites. Thick-cut onion rings, cream spinach, and Chef Joseph Giordano's mind-blowing pasta creations. And best news of all for all diners in our area, the gracious Tony Capasso for years at Valbella is now heading up the dining room at Gabriel's. For reservations, directions, and a very special welcome from Gabriel's maitre d' Tony Capasso, call 203-622-4223. Gabriel's on Church Street in Greenwich. It's new and it's fabulous.
From now till quitting time. This is the official Ad Workstation. AM 1460 WVOX New Rochelle and WVOX Worldwide.
1460 WVOX.
Now, back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the Advocates and my guest, Peter Montgomery from People for the American Way. You know, Justice Stevens put it in his passionate dissenting opinion in Citizens United. Corporations have no consciences, no beliefs, no feelings, no thoughts, no desires, but they do have a legally defined purpose to follow, which is to make as much money as possible for their shareholders. Expenditure for any other purpose constitutes corporate waste in all of it. And all of the states, for the first time in our history, the court has been transformed in a single-minded, profit-making corporations into full-fledged political citizens armed with the rights of the people. It's a sort of strange flip-flop. Is there an answer, Peter, to Justice Stevens's concerns, and can it come from a new Congress, possibly, in this next cycle? What is your thinking on this?
Well, I think there are some things that a new Congress could try to do to lessen the harm, things like the Disclose Act, but at least keep a lot of this money from being secret, and so people could hold corporations more accountable for the money that they're putting in. But because the decision was grounded in a bad reading of the Constitution, it really requires a constitutional amendment to fix, and it's a very high bar. The founders made it a difficult thing to amend the Constitution, but we think we need to do that here. And the good news is that polls show that a huge majority of Americans across the political spectrum disagree with this decision, and they don't want their government turned over to corporate power.
You see, you know, there's an old story about the court following the elections. You know, Mr. Dooley said that. What is it? Peter Finley Dunn wrote about that back around the turn of the century before. Is it possible that there'll be another case and this ruling will be changed a bit? Is that possible? Or do you think that, and of course there's a swing justice in there, Justice Kennedy, think this could happen?
I certainly don't think it could happen with the current court. It's possible that if we had some new justices on the court who were not part of this current conservative majority, that they could revisit this case. But it's hard to know how quickly that could be done. And in the meanwhile, we have 2012 coming up, and more important elections after that. And the corporate money is already flowing into those. So we need to figure out how to get a handle on this.
No question about it. You know, before the 1929 crash, just to frame it for our audience, the ensuing depression and the rise of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his New Deal, the Supreme Court was dominated by business interests, and their view reflected Calvin Coolidge's famous quote, "The business of America is business." Are we heading back to a society that believes that regulation hamstrings business and that job growth can only come from free market capitalism with little or no government interference?
I think we certainly have some people who want to take us there. And we even have a current U.S. senator who says openly that he thinks that it's unconstitutional for the government, for the federal government, to regulate child labor. So there are clearly some people, not only on the far fringe of right-wing legal theory, but who are elected officials who are pretty much ready to roll back much of the progress that the country made during the 20th century and to repeal efforts to protect the environment, to protect worker safety, to protect all kinds of things that that protect the health of American communities and American individuals and American families, and to leave all of that at the mercy of corporations. And so, we think this is kind of a defining issue, and it's a defining time for Americans to think about the kind of country they want going into the future.
Teddy Roosevelt called the presidency a bully pulpit. Certainly, Woodrow Wilson used it as a type of moral cudgel, and certainly a basis for his views on internationalism. Franklin Roosevelt used it very effectively also. Is it the necessity of a president like Barack Obama and leaders in Congress, certainly Democrats, to go out on the stump and start to this process, and I don't want to use the term re-education, but process of putting priorities out in front of the American people of what is important to them and explaining it to them? Because it seems like a lot of young people don't realize what the potential is in losing these protections. What's your thought on the bully pulpit?
I think the bully pulpit is hugely important, and I think that's one of the reasons 2010 was such a disaster for Democrats across the country is that the Democratic leadership did not do a good enough job of making the stakes clear. So I think that just very recently, President Obama seemed to be taking this on more directly in some of the talk that he's done just in the last week or two about the Ryan Republican budget proposal that would essentially get rid of Medicare. President Obama said, well, sure, it's easy to cut federal spending if you're willing to tell poor old people you're on your own. Mm. But that's not the kind of country we want. We need a lot more of that very plain, very direct speaking from the president and from other progressive leaders to really lay out for Americans, here's where the country is going, here's where the corporate interests want to take it, and here's how we can stop them.
Well, it's also interesting that it is starting to come to light that many of these town hall meetings that are being addressed by newly elected Republican, sometimes Republicans with Tea Party backing, and even Paul Ryan, are starting to meet resistance in these town hall meetings. All of a sudden, the grassroots is not responding to their message. And in fact, it had been reported that some of these meetings are being closed and that the people attending are being screened. Is the heat, as Harry Truman said, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. Is this happening, you think?
Well, I think a lot of the Republicans who came into office believed their own propaganda a little too strongly. And they believed that the 2010 elections and public frustration with the economy somehow translated into public support for this radical anti-government agenda that the conservative Republicans are trying to push in Wisconsin and Michigan and all across the country. And so we do think that there is some public pushback. There's people saying, you know, this is not what we elected you to do. We elected you to create jobs, not to savage constitutional principles and savage programs that are really important in terms of protecting people's well-being and American communities.
Well, it's interesting that that was the claim against the Obama administration. Why aren't you working on jobs, even though the unemployment rate has dropped into the eights, or the stock market has not gone from 7,000 to 5,000, it's gone to 12,000 and change, almost 13,000. This was the claim of the Republican Party up until 2010, that this was a mandate for economic stimulus, and all of a sudden, now their mandate is one of social means. You know, in our closing seconds, Peter, what type of America would we have if this brand of Republican reactionaryism controlled the three branches of government in 2013? What do you think we'd see?
Well, I talked about sort of a repeal of a lot of the protections that Americans fought hard to win over the last decades. And we think about what happens if there's no effective regulation of corporate pollution. What happens if there's no effective regulation of worker safety and health? What happens if communities have no protections for their water and for the air that their kids breathe? I mean, all of these things were won over the years, and those are things where government has to step in because the interest of corporations is to maximize their profit. Mm. That's their one interest. And I think Americans are going to need to realize that a lot of the advances that we've made in this country, a lot of things that people fought so hard to win, are really at risk.
Yeah, it could be. It could be that the three branches in the Republican hands could almost roll us back to the pre-progressive era, not even the pre-New Deal era. It's a possibility if you listen to some of these folks and the way they talk. We're running out of time. Peter, I want to thank you for graciously coming on the airwaves at WVOX. Thank you, and I hope we'll get you back again.
Thank you very much. I was very happy to be here. And people can get more information about all these issues we talked about at People for the American Way's website at pfaw.org.
Very good. And I'm expecting to get you back here as the election cycle goes on in possibly next year, and we'll talk about more of your interests. Thank you again. Next week, I'll be discussing with the eminent film critic Jeffrey Lyons his career, his views on the film, his latest book on his Broadway columnist father, the famous Leonard Lyons. If you want to hear this broadcast or any of the other archived Advocate broadcasts, you can access them on my website, advocates-wvox.com, where the information on my guests will be posted. Thank you. Have a great day. And thanks again to Peter Montgomery for coming on our airways. Thank you. America's